This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the Human-Animal Connection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection podcast. I'm your host and the executive director of the Human-Animal Connection. We're a nonprofit organization, and we do therapy dog and therapy donkey work. And I'm so happy to have Dani Dominguez with me here today because she is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and a certified pet nutritionist, which is so important. And she is founder of Sunbright Wellness, where she helps people and their pets achieve whole body wellness through nutrition, lifestyle, and mindset. And her expertise has been featured all over national media and outlets like Oprah Daily, Martha Stewart, Rover, ABC, Real Simple, Better Homes and Gardens. Wow. And she's passionate about translating evidence-based health into practical everyday habits. So, Dani, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and have this conversation because I think it's such an important one.
It really is. I mean, so many people are like really wanting to do better by the animals who share their lives. And often they're, you know, it's hard to get the right knowledge. Often they're veterinarians, you know, unfortunately, poor veterinarians, they don't get any nutritional education in school. All they get is, you know, the companies that come around and give them samples and tell them what they want them to think, you know. But this is so important because oftentimes behavior that's mystifying people are confused about, and it really relates back to what are you eating? And I end up saying to people, so what are you feeding? What are you feeding? What are you feeding? And when we make changes, we see wonderful behavior changes. So I am totally on board with what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I'm on board with what you're doing because I, you know, it's just so amazing what, you know, nutrition and also behaviors and like working through that together, like what you're doing on your side and then, you know, add that nutrition side. Man, it's like a force to be reckoned with, really, when it comes to animal welfare.
It really is. And it really is. So many people are really struggling. You know, my dog is scratching, my cat's not using the litter box, all these things. And we find out when we find out what they're eating, I say, you know what? Maybe it's time for a change because sometimes they don't know. The labels are confusing on the pet food things. And so we're really going to be encouraging people to consider homemade, if not 100%, 50%, 25%, whatever you can manage. This is not a cult. We're not going to turn you into people who, you know, but we're really into looking at healthy things. So let's start with the story of your dog, Foxy, and how she first came into your life and how she completely changed the direction of your career.
Yeah, it was actually, I didn't really expect myself to even get into pet nutrition. So actually a couple of years ago, I was studying for my exam to become a registered dietitian nutritionist. And, you know, there's a lot of studying that goes in with that. I was like, well, I'm just kind of looking for, you know, a job that can help facilitate that studying. I ended up getting recruited for like working at an animal shelter. And I was like, well, that's great. Like I can help animals and then also just study for my exam and do all of that. So while I was working at the animal shelter, I was also actually fostering just these medically challenged cases. Mm-hmm. And since I didn't have any other pets in our home, I really felt like I had the opportunity to just like create this space where these animals could come in and just heal from whatever they had going on in their situation. And like, for example, I ended up having a dog in my home for 150 days and it was on 9 to 11 pills a day for all the medical stuff it was going through. So I was just very thankful to be able to provide that home for him so that he could just then get adopted and have, you know, an awesome life wherever he went. And so kind of in my role at the animal shelter, I ended up transitioning to working more with rural animal shelters and helping decrease euthanasia rates. Mm-hmm. And so in part of that process, I would go down to like border towns and then really just either try to help transport animals to different animal shelters that really just had a better outcome of being adopted or just, you know, providing resources that I could to help with that process of decreasing those rates. And one little dog that came, well, I guess she's not little anymore, but one dog that came through one of the border town shelters was this dog named Foxy. So I ended up transferring her to another animal shelter, and we quickly found out that she had a medical issue that, and I'm not sure how much you know about rural animal shelters, but there's not many veterinarians on staff. They don't have a lot of resources. So when a medical issue that big kind of presents itself, it's usually euthanasia or like them paying out of pocket to help this animal.
Mm-hmm.
So for Foxy, there was this wonderful volunteer that was at the shelter that ended up driving her 3 hours commute to a veterinarian and found out she had this medical issue that was not cancerous, but they ended up treating it with 6 rounds of chemotherapy.
Mm.
So after those 6 rounds of chemotherapy, they asked if I could actually foster her. And since I didn't have any dogs at the time, I was like, well, yeah, sure. She's such a cute dog. Like, yeah, I'll help her with this process of just providing a space outside of a loud shelter to just really heal and recover. And she came into our home, and one day she was just laying on the ground, and she just didn't look well. Like, she had lost a lot of weight. She had lost a lot of fur. She looked like, seriously, that she was like 10 years old when really she was maybe a year old.
Wow.
I was just petting her on the ground, and I was like, man, you know, as you know, becoming a human dietitian, I was like, I really do believe in the healing power of food. Like, maybe what foods can I help with, like, Foxy and, like, helping her heal on that process? And that was my light bulb moment for me, that I was like, wait a minute, there is a whole nother realm that for pet nutrition that I don't even know about. And then when I ended up adopting her, you know, and having to go to the pet store myself and, like, pick foods, I just realized how little I knew about pet food in general. And that kind of started me on this trajectory of becoming a certified pet nutritionist so that I could become knowledgeable myself, but then now also helping other people.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So what did you begin with Foxy? How did you begin the journey of transitioning into healthy foods, and what happened when you did?
Yeah. So essentially, we did choose to adopt her because she is my, I actually took a lot of pride and like as a foster that I'm like, I'm never going to foster fail because I want to have this home open for all of these medically, you know, challenged situations. But she was just my soul dog. So we ended up adopting her. And honestly, I thought I would like go into the pet food aisle because, you know, I essentially at that time had, you know, 4 years of nutrition education, my bachelor's, 2 years in my master's degree, did an entire year of internship. So, you know, you're looking at 7 years of nutritional education. Mm-hmm. That I'd be like, I'm going to be in and out 5 minutes. I'm going to look at the pet food bowl. I will take this away and it'll be good to go. We'll be so just fantastic. And I'll feel really good about the food I'm feeding her because they gave me kibble at that time to supplement until I ended up adopting her.
Yeah.
30 minutes later and still standing in that pet food aisle being like, what's happening? I was so confused. I didn't know at that time that they didn't include like carbohydrate numbers and that if you really wanted the accurate number, you'd have to essentially call the company, get a certain number, do a whole calculation to just find out how much carbs are in this thing, in this kibble. And that just really honestly irritated me because I'm like,
yes.
I have all of this nutrition education and I can't even read a pet food label. How are other people going about this? And I was very frustrated at that moment. So,
yeah, well, that's a great story. 7 years of nutritional training and you can't get through a label and no one else can either. You know, and the labels are, you know, maybe deliberately deceptive. I'm going to say it because, you know, they keep more information from us than they give us on those labels. And you'd have to be, you know, work for the company to really know what's really going on with those labels. So this is one of the reasons why I really encourage people to consider making some homemade foods. There's many foods that we humans eat that are really good for the animals who share our lives. And we can make a single meal that we can enjoy and the animal can enjoy too. So it doesn't have to be like some, like I am like clueless in the kitchen, but I can make homemade kibble. You know, I can boil up some ground beef or some ground turkey and, you know, these different things. I got the other day, I had a little craving for beets, you know, beets and the cooked beets. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have one and they're going to have one. And they loved it. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to give it to them every day. I don't have it every day, but whatever you've got around, I mean, with the exception of a very short list, like onions and caffeine and alcohol, it's really a small list of things that they can't have, macadamia nuts, whatever. But yeah, so this is wonderful. So tell us the story about how you began to pay attention to the connection between digestion, skin conditions, the energy levels. What did you begin to notice when you started doing work with animals?
Yeah, that is like such a And maybe it was just because I didn't know this much, because I didn't really like own my own personal dog. It was always like my parents' dogs, right? And I was like, oh, you know, you take care of them. And now I'm like very cognitive of like Foxy and like really paying attention to her symptoms. And then even just like how the diet changes. So like, and I guess I'll kind of finish my story is that even, you know, being at that pet food, you know, aisle, right? I didn't end up choosing one. And then once I learned more, I decided to home cook for my pet, and I make sure it's nutritionally balanced, that it's AFCO regulated, all of those types of things. And, you know, I don't spend probably more than like 1 to 2 hours in a 10-day period prepping her food. So I think that can also be a barrier for, you know, individuals that they're like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to be in the kitchen for 5 hours cooking for my pet. And that's not always necessarily the case.
We definitely recommend, you know, batch cooking, so you can make food for the week, in some cases food for the month, depending upon what you're making. You can freeze things, you can refrigerate things, and it's just as convenient when you're doing that, when you're thinking ahead that way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I even noticed when I did end up transitioning Foxy over to home cooked food that her fur grew back so much, which I know that was part of the chemo, but like she hardly had any hair on her tail. And now like her longest strand's like 4 inches. Like she has a really like fluffy tail. Mm-hmm. And her like fur was so soft, and like the energy that came from switching that food and being really cognitive of what I'm feeding her, she was like just like a different type of puppy after like, you know, transitioning. So when I'm specifically working with pet parents now with their pet and figuring out, I actually really take a holistic approach. And this is really the same that I do for my human clients, is that, you know, when there's typically a symptom that's being presented, like let's just say an ear infection or, you know, diarrhea or whatever that is, it's usually linked to something. So it's kind of like, instead of just treating that symptom of like, okay, chronic ear infection, put eardrops in it, okay, you're good to go, I really look at the whole picture and say like, well, what is the root cause that is even causing that symptom in the first place? And then if we can use food to help balance out whatever organ is imbalanced, then theoretically the symptom should go away on its own because you're fixing that root problem. It's kind of like a weed, right? If you like just pull it up at the ground, you know, just like at ground level or cut it off, it's going to keep growing back because the root has not been taken out in that process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's Foxy eating now? What's it? Take us through a week of feeding Foxy.
Yeah, so I'm very much like cognitive, making sure there's enough protein, you know, enough, you know, grains and vegetables. And I kind of rotate based off of like what her, like her. So I do a lot of also Chinese medicine in what I do. So I really tailor it to like if she is, you know, kind of maybe more internally hot, then I'll do a lot of more like foods that would help kind of cool that situation down. So I kind of change it based off of like what is going on with her body at that time. But I mean, typically you're looking at, and also a challenge that she is sensitive to both beef and chicken. So I've had to kind of be creative. Mm-hmm. You know, doing like pork, I'll do like some type of grain, depending on what that looks like, whether that's right now I've been really into like just using quinoa and then like a lot of cucumber and oh goodness, what else? I put broccoli in it as well. And then maybe mm-hmm. kale. So I kind of just like keep mixing it up each time that I do.
Yeah.
But then I have like a whole vitamin mixture that, you know, I do before, like with cooking and then also after to make sure it's nutritionally balanced.
That's excellent. Yeah, I know a lot of people have been, there's been a kind of a marketing campaign that all, oh, no grain. And, you know, this is very unhealthy, these no grain diets. This is a marketing hype that's, it's awful because, and what we've been seeing is higher cases of cardiac problems in dogs that we weren't seeing before the no grain trend. So it's really important for people to understand that healthy grains in moderation, everything in moderation, but the healthy grains are an important aspect of a dog's diet. And I don't know about you, but I recommend people cook the vegetables, not raw. I find that dogs, they can't really break down the like a raw piece of broccoli. So go ahead and cook it. It doesn't have to be cooked to oblivion, or you could also puree it. But the vegetables are very good, but they need to be cooked. They need to not be in the raw state. Yeah. Yeah,
I agree with that. Yeah, it's definitely one of those, like, it is a little bit harder in their digestion. And even with that whole, like, grain situation, that it's like, you know, it's like a fad diet in the pet world, which is really unfortunate, because I think that the marketing on all of these foods are very much like taking prey to just people who just didn't know. And there's a lot of time, you know, even when I look back on, like, just what I didn't know about pet nutrition, it's like giving myself that grace, right, of like, well, I just didn't know. But to kind of look back on how some of these marketing industries actually take advantage of that. And then really it's at the detriment of the pet, right? They're the ones suffering in this, which is just really irritating.
Yeah. And again, those labels, I mean, it'll say blueberries and that maybe there's one blueberry in a 50-pound bag, you know, and people are like, oh, great, I'm giving them blueberries, you know. But let's talk for a minute about the horrible kibble, because I'm always on a campaign. Now, if you're not ready to eliminate it 100%, you can eliminate it somewhat or, you know, as much as you can manage. You can make your own, of course. But let's talk about kibble. What are your thoughts about kibble?
Oh, such a controversial question. You know, I think there are kibbles that are better than others. I will say that. Just like any human diet as well, right? There's, I think when we classify fast food, I think there's fast food that, you know, I would probably choose one over the other. Kind of the same thing in this pet industry. When I started like learning more about the pet nutrition labels and all of that type of stuff, I was really surprised that a lot of like, you know, and actually this is something I do educate a lot of my clients on is that they're like, well, I've been feeding the same bag of kibble this entire time. And then when we go and then they started having a reaction like skin or, you know, diarrhea or whatever that looks like. But when we start looking at the ingredient list and it just says meat meal, they don't, but they can like advertise all they want that it's going to be chicken or beef. But because they don't classify on the ingredient list what type of protein that is, one batch may be chicken, one batch may be beef, the next one may be fish. It's kind of whatever it is. They don't have to classify what meat that is. And I think that's, you know, one of those things that, you know, as a pet parent, you're like, well, I didn't do anything wrong because I'm feeding the same thing over and over. But that's probably one of those diets or those kibbles that I'd be like, maybe stick away from because they don't tell you what's actually in the food, but they're labeling it as chicken, which that is just not fair.
Yeah, it's a very small percentage. It's like 20% and they're allowed to write the word chicken on it. But what about the other 80% of ingredients that are in that kibble? And, you know, I just want to remind people that in order to make kibble, because so many, well, first of all, they have a lot of toxic ingredients in it. So they have to heat it to 600 degrees over a long period of time. Now, there's nothing alive at the end of that kibble making process. So it's nutritionally dead. You know, it may have started out of having a few ingredients that were protein at some point. But, you know, this is the problem with kibble is that people think that it cleans their teeth, which is not true.
Correct. That is not true.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, truthfully, I buy a very expensive brand of kibble. It's $90 a bag, but they're only getting a tablespoon of kibble. And it's only for psychological purposes there. I have no illusions that there's any nutrition in that kibble, but it's just something that, you know, they like to crunch on something. So, but, you know, I think, so in other words, it doesn't have to be 100%. You can work on reducing kibble because, you know, they've been, I don't know if you follow the pet industry, the recalls that have been going on. I mean, it's just extraordinary. What the public does not hear, it doesn't make the news, but, you know, literally every day, things are being recalled, voluntarily recalled even, you know, I mean, it's horrific what's going on. I mean, roadkill. And one of the reasons why they know that they've found phenobarbital, which is the drug used in euthanasia, is being found in pet food. So, you know, animals that have been killed in not so great shelter situations and ending up in pet food. And just, you know, it's really, really horrific what's going on the commercial pet side. And so I don't want to dwell too much on the horror of it, but we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to hear a story about how nutrition changed the lives of the pets that you've been working with.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. or visit the website thehumananimalconnection.org to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection, where I'm speaking with Dani Dominguez, and she is a certified pet nutritionist. And I want to hear some stories about how nutrition has really turned the lives around for the people and the animals who share their lives with them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many stories. And this is like such a passion I have, you know, and why I love what I do is that I get to see these like amazing transformations that maybe just like the, you know, just not knowing, right? And then putting on a path that you feel just better about. And so the first story I have is actually of a client came to me with their pet, specifically a dog. And the situation was essentially that they thought the adoption was coming from a more reputable source, and it ended up not being as clean as they had. And the whole adoption process was a little bit more muddy than she expected. So This dog ended up coming to her, and for 2 years she dealt with diarrhea with this little puppy. So its entire life was dealing with diarrhea. So she comes to me and was like, "Hey, this is what's going on." And so we end up looking at like all of the different elements in a holistic approach, and kind of looking at the food and the kibble that she was feeding. And so I pretty much advise, I'm like, well, let's try like home cooked food to just see if we can get some of that diarrhea and get a little bit more fiber into there just to kind of help the situation. And so since this, you know, puppy has really been dealing with this for 2 years, like I didn't really expect it would be a fast turnaround. Typically, that usually if you've been dealing with something that long, it takes the system a little bit of time to kind of come on board with it. So after about 2 months, after feeding, you know, just home cooked meal specifically designed for this dog, that the diarrhea has now officially gone away. So that has been like,
yay.
And even when I think about it from like a whole perspective of like, man, the disruption of the pet owner's life and, you know, that family, like how much she had to deal with. And it usually happened at night. So she's getting up multiple times per, you know, in the middle of the night to clean up, you know, everything off of the carpet and all of that. And I think they had white carpet. So that was a whole nother issue. And then to finally now, yes, you know, the home cooking is a little bit more of a time consuming situation. But when I think about how much effort she went into, you know, financially of going to veterinarians, doing all this blood work, going to all of these specialists and not really having an answer, to now switching the food to, yeah, it's like how much money is she saving in the long run versus like spending maybe a little bit more time prepping the food.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. Wonderful. So exciting. It's so exciting, the possibilities. You know, there's so much that we can do. We can't fix everything, of course, with food, but we can fix a lot. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how Foxy's journey has been. So you've been on this homemade journey with Foxy. So how many years has Foxy been on homemade?
So I guess it's been about 2 years now that I've really tailored the diet to her. And I think this is, actually, I was even just having a consultation with a cat parent just actually last weekend. And we were essentially talking about how, you know, when we do end up trying to transition to like home cook or something, it's like giving yourself grace in that moment. And I think even for me as a pet owner, of not, you know, being ignorant to like not knowing too much about like the pet industry nutrition, that like when I first, you know, started feeding Foxy kibble, until I learned more, that I actually, because of the label being as confusing as it was, that I was unintentionally underfeeding her a cup per day of kibble according to like what she actually needed in calories when I started calculating it out. And I think that's one of those other things that a lot of people don't realize, that on the back of the label, it's like, here's a, you know, the starting amount of how much calories you should have. But it doesn't take into account age, breed, like are they spay or neutered, or their activity level. And so based off of what I was feeding for Foxy, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm starving my dog and I didn't even know it. And this is what actually the same thing that happened with this cat parent after we kind of looked at how many calories this cat needed, that they just were unintentionally underfeeding their cat and wondering why I was so hungry. And so I think through that process of not only learning like the calorie aspect of it, and even, you know, that gives me more knowledge to then feed Foxy appropriately. And so once I started feeding her the right amount of food and even the foods that really served her, it's like she has energy for days. So it's one of those things that, man, their personality can change. And I mean, I even think about it from a human perspective that it's like, if you have like a chronic gut ache, you're not really going to feel well, and you might be more irritable or have a behavior that is not necessarily your true personality just because you aren't feeling well. So it's kind of the same with pets and like even behaviors, right? We got to take that into account that if a behavior is showing up, it might be nutritionally related because like their gut hurts or they just can't communicate what that is. So if really we can maybe put those two together and be like, hey, maybe this behavior is related to this, fix that root cause, that they might be a different personality once they start feeling better.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see what can happen when the body comes back into balance. The other things can begin to heal, their own natural healing system can kick in. You know, it's just an extraordinary journey. And you know, I want to just remind people that if you're thinking about this journey, it doesn't have to be, it shouldn't be 100% overnight. We're talking about a gradual process. You can ease into it, you know, just maybe 20% of home cooked or 25% to begin for the first week and see how the animal's doing and gradually increase to a level that's good for you. And again, you know, Danny and I both agree that it doesn't have to be 100%. You do the best that you can with the resources that you have. And sometimes I open a can, but it's not the can that you're going to see on the shelf. You know, I'm willing to pay a premium price, and it's going to be maybe a tablespoon out of that can, and the rest is going to be that homemade meat that I've made or some other elements. And I just got a bread machine, and they love the crust. You know, it's just they leave, sit there and watch me eating. Are you going to leave me a piece? Is that piece for me? You're not going to eat that last piece, are you?
They almost become like bougie once you give them like this home cooked meal. They're like kind of stick their nose up at anything else. You're like, okay.
Yeah. Cool. Great. So for people who are looking to get started, what are some simple tips to ease into homemade that you would like to offer?
Yeah, I think you really like hit it on the head right there, essentially, of like, you know, it's not an all or none situation. That if you want to go all home cooked, that's great. And I think there's benefits to that. But like, there's also great, you know, meeting you where you're at. And there are some kibbles that I, like I said, would recommend more than others. And so it's kind of like even in my human clients that sometimes it's a matter of like, if we even take one fast food meal and put that into a home cooked meal, you're doing 1% better than you were before. Or even like, hey, maybe instead of those fries, get a side salad or a broccoli. It's like these small changes can really change the trajectory over a long period of time of what you're actually helping them with their health and wellness and their really overall longevity of life. And because they don't live as long as us, we want them to live as long as possible. So I guess it's just really in that moment of like giving yourself grace as you're learning these things and also just like finding out what they like as well. I think a lot of the time, you know, like I actually fed Foxy beets. This was a while back, and I was kind of like, is she going to eat it or not? And she ate it. But then I gave her like something else and she like spit that out. So I think in those moments that it's like give that time and space to that moment and then like kind of meet yourself where you're at, either financially or even just time energy, right? Of like how much time can I invest into home cooking or what that even looks like? And just, yeah, provide that extra nutrition for them.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, it's such an exciting world. You know, I remember I had one podcast. I interviewed a veterinarian. He was a holistic veterinarian in the 50s. And so he was way ahead of his time. And he recognized that post-surgical, that the animals would get much better faster if he gave them real homemade human food. And this began him on his journey. And another veterinarian I talked to who was in medical school in the 70s, and he said when he was in medical school in the 70s, one in 100 dogs would get cancer, and it was always older age dogs. It was never younger dogs. And now it's like one in four. I mean, it's like, it's so insane the difference. And I remember, I think it was Alexandra Horowitz talked about so many dogs actually live in the wild around the world. And, you know, they're getting scraps and eating dead things and like every, you know, eating this, God knows what they're eating, right? And they live longer than the dogs that are on commercial pet food. And there've been some studies with the wild dogs. They would offer them kibble. These are dogs that are on the street fighting for their food every day, offer them kibble, and most of them turned it down. Yeah. You know, the lower brands, you know, they're really the grocery store brands, those great big bags, you know. So everybody, you know, of course, do the best that you can. You know, we recognize that everybody has different considerations. But if you can just, you know, every once in a while, if you're making a hamburger, make one for your dog.
Yeah. Right? And even just looking back on the ingredient list, that it's like if your kibble does say meat meal, then maybe consider switching to one that at least states the protein. So you're a little bit closer to like, hey, I know there's actually chicken in it. Right. And then because marketing is very deceiving for pet food and the pet food industry, is that they can also put like chicken flavor and not have any chicken in the actual product. So it's just... very aware of like what that is. And I actually teach a lot, even with my pet clients now, of like going through the label and being like, well, hey, maybe you should, even if it does say chicken, there's like chicken meal or chicken byproduct. And all of those are actually different parts of the animal. And so it's really being aware of like, well, what is actually being put into this kibble and that I feel good about feeding to my pet.
Yeah, very good. Well, how can people get a hold of you? Do you do consultations online? Are you all over the world or how do you work?
Yeah. So if you, so yes, I do consultations and all of those are virtual so that I can work with as many people as possible. So if you go to www.sunbrightwellness.com, you can like sign up for any service there that I do, whether it's like calorie count and just figuring out how much calories your pet needs, all the way to if you want to home cook, then I make sure that's nutritionally balanced for your pet and really finding foods that will help support their nutrition or whatever is going on in their health situation. And even if it's like reviewing your current like kibble and seeing if that's actually going to be appropriate at that time, or maybe even finding a kibble more appropriate for what's going on with the situation. So I kind of do a lot of different things, but I am, but eventually I'm actually trying to put both humans and pet nutrition together and as like a program itself so that it's like, hey, your pet can be your accountability partner for not only if you're going to make broccoli for yourself, might as well make some broccoli for your dog or, you know, your cat or whatever that is, and kind of eating that together and that incentive.
Fantastic. Well, Dani, it's been delightful to have you on this show. Thank you for the good work you're doing for people and the animals who share their lives.
Well, thank you for all the work you're doing. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I had a blast. Thank you.
All right. Bye for now. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human-Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.